I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity, pop culture, arts, social issues, TV podcast. And we go live every Sunday morning at about
11.
It is 11, but now that we can schedule the podcast to go live. So when we started the podcast, we couldn't schedule it.
No, we used to be up early in the
morning.
So
we have to get up on a Sunday morning. And that's why we said, let's do a little cushy 11.
Yeah.
And we would get up on the Sunday morning and schedule it. But now we can schedule it. So today's Friday. We record this on Fridays. So we can schedule it for 7 a.m., which I think might suit people better.
Isn't it so funny how the world has changed?
The
now
world
I'm
has
like
changed.
Yeah, a good early start on a Sunday.
Exactly.
Back when we used to do this the first time we did this podcast years ago, we'd be like, we used to record in the Saturday morning. We'd be hungover on the Saturday and the Sunday because we used to go out multiple times a week.
God, can you imagine?
I can't imagine actually going into a premises again and standing with a drink.
I know
the way you used to like go to Coppers or a nightclub and buy a drink at a bar and walk around with it and was like maybe a sticky little pink thing in a plastic cup in Coppers.
Yeah.
Whereas now I can't imagine going anywhere that isn't dinner and drinks and someone just brings me drinks to the table.
It's true. And it's those little hard things that I used to hate about pubs. Like you've just said, the sticky drink, the stickiness of a pub.
Yeah.
That I miss so much, or the smell of rotten cider stuck to the tables.
Yeah.
Like a sticky, dirty, dark pub.
Or like a beer garden when there's a sport on.
Cassie, that was one of my fantasies the other day. I was fantasizing about being in a packed beer garden with some match that I don't care about.
Don't give a single, like, couldn't tell you this actual sport.
Yeah, but you found one person that you can actually have a proper bitch with in the corner.
Yeah.
Endless glasses of Sauvignon Blanc.
And there's the old Ireland flags everywhere and the bunting.
Yeah. And the lads are delighted to go up to the bar and get round after round because they're all buzzing and no one notices that you haven't paid for a drink.
In ages.
Yeah. I do miss that. Those were the days. And then you leave the beer garden and it's still like 4 o'clock and it's bright out.
And you might
get
go
the Lewis.
And get a bag of chips or something and then you just go home and chill it off.
Do you know, I haven't been drinking in this lockdown at all.
You've been doing a great job.
And I will say this. I haven't seen any huge improvement that would say to me, I'm going to go teetotal for life.
Yeah, remember, we talked about this before, because before the pandemic, I had gone quite a few months without drinking. I had really stopped. And actually for the first couple of months, the first couple of weeks into the first lockdown, I didn't. And I was like, I'm not going to drink during lockdown. This is great. And I was totally fine. Now that didn't last very long.
Yeah.
At all. It's actually gotten to the stage where we have a glass bag delivery collection that comes every week and the bag is full. It's like a mini skip. But I noticed that as well. I don't feel like it impacts my life significantly enough to want me to go teetotal. The only difference is that my mood on a Monday is easier. But
yeah, like it's kind of hard to measure because you can't measure what you haven't felt. So who knows how crap we could feel if we were heavily drinking right now, you know?
But
so
I mean, I am.
By we, I mean me and my partner, Aiden.
Okay, yeah, you guys over there doing really well.
Us, yeah. So we don't feel like jumping out of our skin or anything, but also who knows what state we might be in if we were still drinking on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
Because we're coping right now. So, you know, who knows? But it really punctuates, and it's not right that it punctuates the week, but it does punctuate the week. Like it differentiates Friday from Thursday, the glass of wine. I'm reading a great book. I'm listening to a great book called The Naked Mind. And it's about our dysfunctional relationship with alcohol, But it extends far beyond that into all of the subconscious beliefs that influence our behaviors that we don't really notice that we're perpetuating every day.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend it to anyone who kind of struggles with discipline or is trying to break a habit or form a habit. I would really recommend it because it gives you a different way of thinking about it. And I've read all the James Clear habit books. Mm. This is different. It's really goes into, as a society, how much we've celebrated alcohol and how intrinsic in social life it is right now. And even if you don't have a problem, it's interesting to think about.
It is interesting. Actually, Sophie White writes about this in her new book, Corpsing. She talks about her journey into AA and the moments that she realized it was impacting on her life. And I think, and there's a piece about how when she first was in recovery, she just couldn't consider socializing, that everything revolved around alcohol. And it's true.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I can definitely function without alcohol, and I have for a really long time, but now I just find it takes the edge off on a Thursday. We do a live show on a Thursday evening as well for the Creep Dive, and I think that if I stopped drinking at that, people would be disappointed, because it seems that in all the years of doing some research and coming up with stories, what they actually enjoy is when I fuck up because I'm drunk and I can't tell the story. So
yeah,
I'm just going to keep going with that.
Yeah, and like, you're perpetuating really unhealthy ideas about alcohol there, and that you have to drink to be fun, and that's not true.
I do have to drink to be funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that probably is true.
It is, actually.
You.
Yeah.
The place I want to get to is I want to have alcohol in my life. I don't know if I want to have it for genuine reasons, because I enjoy it, or because there is an element of addiction to it. This is what this book explores. Mm. I want it in my life because it's fun.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be a given anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be, oh, it's Thursday, so obviously the wine needs to be in the fridge.
Yeah.
I want to decide to drink every now and then.
Yeah.
But for a while, there was no decision. It was just what we did.
I think that because our lives have become so routine now, because there's so little we can do, that's maybe where it's becoming a problem. You're saying that it's Thursday, it's punctuating the week, the wine's going to be in the fridge. I know that I've got a live show on Thursday and I'm going to drink on a Thursday evening.
Mm.
But when things are normal and we're not so regimented, when we're not so stuck and so, like, limited by our options, I think then it's easier. Because what I'm looking forward to is having that flexibility and spontaneity that I could be like, here, Megan, will we go down and get a pint of Guinness? You love a pint of Guinness.
I do.
And we'll meet, you know, our third friend that we never speak of.
Yeah.
And go get a pint of Guinness together.
Hi, Kira. She'll never hear this because she doesn't listen to Before
It's not
Brunch.
For her.
It's not for her, which we heard on the grapevine.
Yeah.
Sly.
Anyway, today,
that's the preamble over. I hate preamble. I know you like it, but I'm going to put a little note in the show notes for when the preamble ends, for people who just want to hear about Meghan Markle.
Okay, well, as someone who works exclusively and professionally in podcasts, I know from our own intensive market research that people enjoy the preamble.
You didn't ask that in the latest survey, because I wanted to say I don't like it. I am putting in the show notes that the real chat begins at X time, and we'll see then from the market research. No, because we don't have those analytics to see.
Do you know what?
Who skips.
Okay, we'll let people just enjoy the experience on their own, and we won't feel bad about preamble or no preamble.
Okay, yeah, let's roll with it. So Meghan Markle, she is doing a tell-all with Oprah Winfrey this Sunday, which is the day that we're going live with Before Brunch. It's Friday now.
So us and Oprah.
How about that for an intro?
Fantastic. Great segue. So us and Oprah are today talking about Meghan Markle. Only half of us is talking directly to Meghan Markle, but we have some insight. And for those of us, because it's on CBC or
CBS,
RTE are actually going to play it on Monday.
I was going to say, I forgot to research earlier how we could watch it in Ireland. So we can watch it on RTE on Sunday.
Monday.
Oh, on Monday, the following day.
So tomorrow.
Okay, so tomorrow.
Even though it's Friday.
Even though today is Friday.
Yeah, for us.
Okay, so we can watch this tomorrow. The reason it is a huge TV moment is obviously because there's been so much around Meghan Markle's journey from meeting Harry through getting married to having a baby to leaving the royal family that has been played out in the press, and we have not heard from Meghan Markle at all.
No, this is their first public interview together since their engagement in 2017.
The interview that Meghan Markle did, I believe on the BBC, where she welled up with tears and said thank you to the journalist who asked her if she was okay, was one of the only insights we've seen into the trauma that Meghan has experienced in the last few years. So this is really the moment where she's sitting down. It was originally going to be a 90-minute segment. Now it's going to be 2 hours.
Ooh.
So Oprah obviously believes that there's enough there for 2 hours of sit-down
there
television.
There absolutely is.
And the piece that was chosen in the teaser was all around silence, being silenced. And Oprah asks Meghan, have you been silent or have you been silenced? We know that Meghan is going to be really candid in this because we've already seen teasers where she's referred to the royal family as the firm.
I love that.
Isn't that so shady?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the use of the word the firm.
Because it is. It operates as an enterprise. They're concerned about image. It's not a family. It's an image. Everything's calculated. You can see from what has broken in the news this week about the timing of things. And actually, the Times UK responded to this really well, because as soon as the teaser for the Oprah interview dropped, a story broke in the Times that some of Meghan Markle's former staff in the palace have accused her of bullying. Mm. That story is 2 years old. And when asked why they were publishing at this point in time, the Times responded saying that a source for the palace reached out to them, asked them to publish it at this time because they felt that the whole story wasn't being told, that this Oprah interview would only offer a one-sided view to Meghan and Harry's experiences, and they wanted to show what life was really like. So they've come out and said, well, she was a bully, she was rude to staff. Now, plenty of staff has stepped forward and said, that's not quite how it happened. There was lots of other conditions into the employment of people. But it seems to be very much a kind of wishy-washy story that they've put together to balance out this in Oprah interview.
It's funny to me that they can now say this is one-sided, when in fact this is the first time that we're hearing Meghan's side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been proven time and time again, and Meghan confirmed it in the teaser for Oprah, that the royal family is the source of the leaks and the smear campaign that has happened around Meghan. She has been victim of people in her very close circle within the royal family who are against her leaking information about her to the press.
Yeah.
So the press and the royal family have both been complicit in perpetuating this narrative about Meghan as Duchess difficult, as a bully, as different. And that's very scary and a very terrifying position for her to have been in. But the fact that the timing of this release around Meghan being a bully just says to me, the royal family are scrambling.
Absolutely.
They are scared about whatever is going to come out. And they've really lost their sense of, they used to be so distant from the gossip, so one step removed. And now they are knee deep in it. They're releasing their own statements. They're saying, we're going to investigate this bullying case.
Mm.
What I want to know is, okay, if you're going to investigate this case, which is a HR matter within the firm, and as you said, it's an enterprise, and I love using that term, that is it. And Harry said about the Crown, you know, what we're seeing on the Crown is fiction, but it gives insight to the fact that protocol and duty are to be held above family.
Yeah.
It's a firm, it's not a family. So now I want to know, okay, if this is the HR process, what was the process when Prince Andrew, you know, was accused of being bosom buddies with a paedophile rapist convicted? Yeah. If I were working for the firm and I was reporting or working with Prince Andrew, I would have probably gone to HR and said, hey, I don't really feel comfortable working for Prince Andrew.
Yeah, and as we've seen, there has been photographic evidence that places Prince Andrew in situ with someone who has claimed that he sexually assaulted her, or was she was underage and he was part of Jeffrey Epstein's ring, and they just they really just glossed over it.
Yeah.
There's also another HR issue previously when two staff fought in front of the Queen and HR released a statement saying they do not comment publicly on HR matters.
Wow.
And now with the allegations against Meghan, they've released a full statement saying we take these very seriously. We're inviting people who previously worked at the palace to return to give their statement, because a part of the story is that there has been this absolute avalanche of people leaving the palace and they can't hold on to staff to work with Meghan long enough.
Mm.
Which I just don't believe. I have met Meghan Markle.
Bombshell.
There we go. Yeah. And I met Meghan Markle in 2014 when she was part of One Young World in Dublin.
I remember this.
And she was, obviously we're at a conference. It's a very polished kind of conference. They bring youth representatives from every country in the world together, and they bring these kind of high-class philanthropists and business leaders, and people are doing amazing work. So there's the likes of, you know, Bob Geldof is there, Richard Branson. It's an incredible conference. You can only go if you're under 30, so...
No longer eligible.
No longer eligible. Maybe it's under 35. Half of us are eligible. But we can... It's a really, really good opportunity to go and learn from business leaders. And Meghan was there talking about her philanthropic work. And I got to meet her backstage and she was absolutely lovely. Now, obviously, that was a snapshot. She's going to be as nice as she can be meeting the youth and whatever. But like, you see moments of her and you see... She worked with people that I worked with because I was helping them to bring the conference to Dublin.
Yeah.
And I knew that she was trusted and she was really well liked. And I find it very difficult to believe that someone who espoused those values would then be very difficult behind the scenes, knowing how the media works. And not only did Meghan Markle work as an actress on Suits, she also operated the TIG, which was a great lifestyle website back in the day. So she knows PR, she knows press, she knows branding. She knows how to manage herself. And it would just be an absolute slip up for her to be rude to staff.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I wonder, is it even superfluous to the conversation to discuss whether Meghan is a good person or not? Because I don't know if Meghan's an angel or really nice. And she probably can be difficult behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Everyone has their moments.
Everyone has their moments. And she is in a situation where everyone in the room is against her.
Yeah.
She is going against the grain. To put it very simply, Kate Middleton is the type of person you expect a prince to marry. And Meghan Markle is not. And that... It has caused incredible friction, ripples throughout the press, ripples throughout Britain. The firm is not a diverse place.
No.
There are undertones of racism, classism and sexism.
Absolutely.
Whether Meghan is a nightmare or not, she apparently gets up at 5 o'clock and sends off a ream of texts. There was a story where she hissed at a personal assistant. Yeah, of course she did. So brilliant. She's a bit difficult. I love Duchess Difficult. If it hadn't been used as such a weapon against her, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm not really too into the royal family, the current day royal family. I don't read about them or I have read about Meghan. I love Tudor history and I love Anne Boleyn.
Mm.
And she, in a similar way, she's kind of positioned as the shrew, as the conniving woman who changed the prince or led him astray.
Yeah, because it's such a tried and tested easy thing to do.
Like archetype.
Yeah, if there is a woman who's standing, who doesn't fit the mold in any way or isn't complicit in the way that things should be run, in the way that Kate Middleton is, she's very complicit, very pleasant and cooperative is what her school report would have said year on year.
And I'm sure she can be difficult.
Yes, but outwardly pleasant and cooperative, you know, teacher's pet. Anyone outside that mold is branded difficult.
Yeah.
And there are so many connotations with a difficult woman. A difficult woman is shrill, is unruly, is unladylike, is problematic, you know, and it's that one Duchess Difficult is so loaded.
Yeah.
So loaded. And it it's just, it says that if you disagree with anything, then you're difficult. And with that comes all this other baggage. And it's such an easy way to tear somebody down.
That's it. And it comes back to, we said it in the last episode about Anna Delvey. The reason these stories are so impactful and so important to discuss isn't about the character at the center of the plot or the protagonist or pulling apart. Like, it wouldn't be useful for us to sit down for 40 minutes and decide whether Meghan Markle is nice or difficult, good or shrewd. But it tells you so much more about the system that she's in and what she's exposing about that system and how unfairly she's been treated. And it might sound like a leap or dramatic to say they are perpetuating the angry black woman trope.
Yeah.
But actually, when you zoom out, that is what's happening here.
Yeah. So I have some headlines and they're brilliant. So blatant when you look at them side by side. And this has been so brilliantly put together. So this is the difference in treatment of Kate Middleton and Meghan Markle in the UK press. And I think the UK press are so problematic.
The British press are, and the Americans are laughing at them now.
Absolutely. So one story, same publication, one story about Kate Middleton. Not long to go, pregnant Kate tenderly cradles her baby bump while wrapping up her royal duties ahead of maternity leave. And William confirms she's due any minute now. And there's some pictures of Kate Middleton with her hands on her bump.
Mm.
Beautiful, gorgeous, lovely story. Meghan Markle. Why can't Meghan Markle keep her hands off her bump? Experts tackle the question that this got the nation talking. Is it pride, vanity, or acting, or a new age bonding technique? And pictures of Meghan Markle's hands in the same way that Kate Middleton's were.
She was described as showy when she did that. I remember that headline. Yeah. Showy. Meghan Markle cradles bump.
So it's so subtle, but when you see them side by side, it's really problematic. There's another one here. Step too far. Meghan Markle slammed for putting her hands in her pockets. And then next to that, a picture of the Queen with her hands in the in her pockets on the cover of Hello.
It just blows the lid on the things that these people find important. And it's all about protocol and whether your legs are crossed correctly or not and whether you're wearing the right hat. Yet you can have someone with links to a paedophile rapist.
Yeah.
With the highest of military honours in there. He was never stripped of any of his medals.
And there's talk of stripping Harry and Meghan of their UK citizenship.
Yeah.
It's like, can you even do that?
Yeah.
Can you even just decide that someone's not a citizen because they've decided to move country?
There was another one I remember where Meghan had made avocado toast for a friend.
I have it here, right? Kate's morning sickness cure. Prince William gifted with an avocado for pregnant Duchess. And then Meghan Markle's beloved avocado linked to human rights abuse and drought, millennial shame.
So they have said, they are basically saying Meghan Markle's snack causes drought and murder.
Yes. And for Kate, it's a real easing of her morning sickness. Like, they're absolutely horrendous. There's a story of Kate Middleton having a bouquet of lilies following the royal code, and then Meghan Markle having, when she has the same flowers, there's a headline, how Meghan Markle's flowers have put Princess Charlotte's life at risk, because there's a picture of Princess Charlotte sneezing.
It's just so blatant, and it is the subtleties and the semantics that people have used about her, and they're all small shifts in the way that she's spoken about and the way that she's treated. And if you take one headline, and, you know, fans of the Daily Mail or people who are very kind of into the royal family will say, that's fair enough. You know, we've always held people to a certain standard in the royal family. But when you take it like that, you zoom out, you look at all the headlines, you cannot deny that that Meghan has been treated very differently.
And very unfairly. And I am so happy. And I think I think Kate Middleton was deemed to be this sort of like exciting progressive princess who was coming into the royal family years ago. And she was a disappointment. And for a long time, I think when William and, or when Harry and Meghan announced their engagement and we saw Meghan leave social media and take down the Tig, I was like, if she's just going to be another quiet princess after years of being an outwardly spoken feminist who's like actively worked and campaigned for women's rights, if she then steps back into what is a very misogynistic firm, a very misogynistic family, I'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to see her come out. And it's not, these aren't huge exposés. What more could you get from the royal family than Prince Andrew has been linked to Jeffrey Epstein? Like, they can't get a scandal that's bigger.
That's the scandal. Yeah.
Rumors that they had tapped Princess Diana's phone. Like, we know that they're a scandalous family. Mm. What Meghan Markle is lifting the lid on is the insidious day-to-day misogyny, racism, and things that are just completely unacceptable in society. I'm here for it.
And it's funny because when she deleted the Tig, we spoke about that on an old episode of Before Brunch. We were both disappointed.
It was a great site.
And people who are anti-Meghan were very much in, their position was, this woman will do anything to be part of the royal family. Mm. This woman has made a play for Harry. She has, you know, gotten into his head and changed him. And Harry was very beloved of the British press.
Yeah.
He was always a divil and a brat, but they loved him. And there's this idea that she changed him and she pulled him away and that she made a play for this royal family. And that if we're to allow her into the royal family, it's in exchange for pictures of the baby on the steps when you have your baby. It's this idea that if you're getting in, there's an exchange. And that whole idea holds up this idea.
Yeah, we're with you.
Of the royal family as something that people want to be part of, or that's exciting, or that's, you know, that's
worthy
the
of
ultimate
praise.
Dream. But now Meghan has very clearly dashed all of those hypotheses. There's a different word for idea.
There we go.
By saying, no, I'm actually going to position myself very much against the royal family or the firm. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't need to give you pictures of Archie on the steps in exchange for being a member of the royal family. There was a huge controversy when she shared photos of her second pregnancy. Herself and Harry did an announcement on the same day, 37 years later, after Diana had announced her second pregnancy. And people are going, oh, I thought you didn't want attention. I thought she had also shared with the public that she had suffered a miscarriage prior to that. And that was slammed. Yeah. Like, I mean, if she is going to tell these stories, and it's really important for women like Meghan to tell stories about miscarriage and subjects that aren't commonly broached publicly, and the women have had very private experiences of these traumas, and now people are speaking about it more, and we should celebrate that. She can also then go and share a happy moment of a second pregnancy announcement. Yeah. Meghan doesn't owe anyone anything. She hasn't accepted royalty in exchange for photos of the dog behaving a certain way, crossing her legs a certain way. She has completely dismantled that, which I think is fantastic. And this new CBS documentary is like one step up from what Diana did back then.
Yeah.
With Martin Bashir.
Yeah.
She did an explosive BBC documentary, but it was a lot more subtle than I feel what we're going to hear from Meghan.
Oh, no, I think this is going to be blatant, because I think that Diana, while probably she knew that there were problems and she was deeply uncomfortable and treated really poorly, I think Meghan is going to articulate all the issues very well.
Yeah.
Even the fact that she's referring to it as the firm, even as she said they're perpetuating falsehoods about us. Like, she is gunning for them. She is going to clarify what she needs to clarify. She's a very intelligent woman, and she's going, I think this is going to be brilliant. I think what's interesting is that she clearly has Harry's backing, and we've never really heard from Harry because he's been so young when, you know, his mother died. And it'd be really interesting to get his opinion on the royal family and how it operates and his responsibilities within that. Because, like, it's conservative to the point of oppressive.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's interesting that in the kind of clip that he did with James Corden, he was on the open top bus and he was like, I've never been on the open top bus. I wasn't allowed to do this. It's like, why? You're okay, I get that you're the royal family, but come on, you're fucking landlords at the end of the day. Like, that's it.
It's
get
so
over it.
It's so overwhelmingly arbitrary.
Yeah.
All of it. And it doesn't work in 2021.
No, and I think that's what's really interesting. It shouldn't work at all because the world is different now. And we are so sensitive to inequality, and we are so rightly so intolerant of racism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, any of that kind of stuff. And the lack of diversity, obviously, not like within the family, but the lack of diversity within the brand of the palace, within this idea of the royals, is not representative of the world that we live in now. So people, I just don't think, have the same respect for what they do anymore, and they need to move with the times. I'm interested to learn who is the driving force behind the brand royal. Like,
totally,
who is it?
If you look at this as a firm, which we are doing today, like, we know that recently the Queen gave Archie, which is Harry and Meghan's first son, a waffle maker for his birthday or for Christmas or something. It's really cute. The Queen is his great grandmother. The Queen represents certainly everything that the royal family represents. And in my mind, when I see a statement from the royal family, I see it as coming from the Queen. That's so incredibly naive.
Yeah, it's not the Queen.
It's not the Queen. She is absolutely a cog in this wheel. She's complicit. But this is so far reaching. The weeds of the royal family extend all the way out to the countryside. This idea of maintaining protocol. And the scary thing about the royal family or the firm is that it's completely insidious. It's everywhere. It's not just one person with a book of rules that everyone has to follow. The rules have become part of the British value system, the whole system.
And they're obviously terrified, but it's a classic case of them being so stuck in the mud because they're afraid to move for fear they lose everything, that they're getting stuck in the mud, but they don't realize that the world is moving way beyond them. So by staying put, they're falling behind. And without moving with the times, they're just going to lose relevancy. I mean, they're not relevant. They're not at all relevant. I don't engage with the royals at all.
No. The only touch point is the Meghan Markle stuff. If they had, it was such an opportunity for them to champion her and to hold her up as the new royal family. And it did seem like it was going that way, and she was complying. And
well, she was promised that she could have, like, you know, set up her charity in the UK and, like, continue her philanthropic work. And a lot of her, because a lot of her work centered around women and women's rights, I would think that she would have been happy with that, you know, because it was quite progressive.
Yeah. But it just, again, shows how difficult it is to change a system. And one person, Meghan is doing a terrific job, but her entering that system and being different and wanting to get up at 5 a.m. and send texts, and she had ideas on how they could improve public engagements, and they didn't want that from her.
Yeah.
And it's the same in every corporate company around the world. There's these systems and these classes and these ranks, and if you don't comply, your life is made very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And if there's a HR case, if there's a bullying claim about one person, it can be treated very differently than a bullying claim about someone else within that corporate structure. And we all know people who have been bullied at work and bosses that are difficult. And one of the examples that was brought forward was one of the personal assistants had Meghan at an event, and Meghan was heavily pregnant. It was a really crowded event. Meghan turned to this personal assistant and hissed something. And this was seen by a Daily Mail reporter.
Yeah.
And that same Daily Mail reporter saw that personal assistant crying in the car later and linked the two events.
Could be absolutely anything.
I mean, it's so tenuous.
She could have watched that T-Mobile Welcome Home ad.
Yeah.
As much progress as we make in things, it's just the easiest way to undermine a powerful woman, or a headstrong woman, is to call her difficult.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just so loaded. There's loads of baggage. And it's an inexplicable statement that just, it's just an excuse to get rid of something, you know. Oh, she was difficult, she was removed from the company. But what exactly did she do? And I mean, there's a whole year worth of podcasts to go into about the language we use when we talk about men and women in the workplace. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I just think that Megan represents the feelings of the masses, I would say now.
Yes.
Megan, we're living in a world now where I think things have become so polarized. We've got politics is polarized. Wealth is polarized. Like there is, it just feels like there's the rich and there's the poor now. And the world is only built to facilitate the success of people who are already successful. Like we talked about it, money begets money. And it's becoming so much more blatant now that I just think people aren't going to stand anymore for this already powerful thing protecting itself and using its resources and the media to just constantly incubate itself and look after itself. They're already protecting Prince Andrew. If that's not enough to tear them down, I don't know if this interview is going to be the thing that does it. I think if they're willing to stand behind a paedophile, then, you know, the people aren't going to be outraged about their racist behavior or their treatment of Meghan. But like, hopefully all of the things accumulating together will be sufficient to say, look, these guys just, they're not relevant. They shouldn't be held in any high esteem anymore.
Absolutely. And it's the era of the little person being able to stand up to the system. And it's funny, this week's episode has the same themes as the Anna Delvey episode. A person who's perceived to be imperfect or a flawed person can expose an entire system by not complying.
Yeah.
Brilliant. More power to her. I'm looking forward to this documentary. I think it's going to be the TV moment of the year.
Absolutely.
So we can do a debrief next week. But until then, have a great week.
Do we have any homework for people this week? I don't think we do.
No, and do you know what? The homework thing, it works sometimes. And then other times, because we're quite a reactive podcast, it mightn't work as much. What about I May Destroy You? Will we set that as homework?
We are going to talk about I May Destroy You. We're actually going to talk, but actually, because A Promising Young Woman hasn't been released yet in Ireland and it's coming up and it's a fantastic film. We've both been able to watch it. And we're going to talk about the representation of sexual violence in film and TV.
Yeah, that is some homework. And then if something else happens during the week, sure, we'll roll with it. But it's worth watching anyway.
It's a brilliant film.
It's an incredible piece
of
work. And
I May Destroy You is it's a hard watch though, isn't it?
I've got one episode and I haven't managed to find the second. And I just found it, the first episode's not, there's nothing too heavy in the first episode. Yeah. Until the very last minute when you're kind of, the blood drains from your face and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's not what I expected. It's a difficult watch.
Brilliant though.
Absolutely brilliant. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks. I've been Cassie Delaney.
Oh, that's new.
Yeah.
I've been Megan Cassidy.
And we'll see you again next week. Okay. Bye.